Air Force officials reveal a security breach at Malmstrom Air Force Base. Good evening, I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us about the latest candidate for Montana's U.S. House seat. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has a look at how small businesses are trying to get some more customers to shop locally. And in our ongoing series on climate change, reporter Allison Mills takes us to some of the shrinking glaciers in Glacier National Park. Air Force officials tell the Associated Press that twice this year, officers entrusted with the launch keys to nuclear-tipped missiles have been caught leaving open a blast door. That door is intended to help prevent a terrorist or other intruder from entering the officer's underground command post and potentially compromising secret launch codes. One confirmed violation occurred in May at the Malmstrom Air Force Base in Great Falls. In that case, a person who entered the capsule to do maintenance work realized that the deputy crew commander was asleep with the door open and reported the violation to superiors. Transgressors such as this are rare, and are rarely revealed publicly. But officials say they have happened undetected many more times than in cases of the four officers who were given administrative punishments this year.
And in other news from around the state, officials in Flathead County are searching for a missing duck hunter after an overturned kayak was found in the Flathead River southwest of Kalispell. Sheriff Chuck Curry says the kayak was removed from the river just south of Sportsman's Bridge on Montana Highway 82 early yesterday afternoon. The kayak belongs to a 65-year-old man who had reportedly gone duck hunting yesterday morning. The man's vehicle was located at the Sportsman Fishing Access. A water, ground, and air search began yesterday afternoon and continued today with the addition of side-scan sonar and search dogs.
Officials in Butte-Silverbow County say a man who was struck by a car and critically injured while crossing a street in Butte last week has died. Coroner Lila Bresch tells the Montana Standard that John Hollander died at a Great Falls hospital last night of injuries suffered in the Friday night collision. Lebresch says Hollander was a transient and his age wasn't immediately available. Officials were not able to identify the man until a family member contacted the hospital. Hollander was crossing Harrison Avenue near the Butte Civic Center when he was struck by a car at about 8 p.m. Friday.
An appeals court has temporarily blocked a Kootenai National Forest logging project under review for its possible effects on a small threatened grizzly bear population. The 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals issued a two-week injunction against the grizzly project yesterday, which calls for logging more than 900 acres and thinning or burning 2,100 acres in the northwestern Montana forest. The Alliance for the Wild Rockies had requested the emergency injunction because a federal judge had not yet responded to a previous request to delay the project until the conservation group's lawsuit is resolved. U.S. District Judge Donald Malloy in August ruled the U.S. Forest Services and Fish and Wildlife Services analysis of the grizzly project was sufficient and the project could move ahead. The Alliance has appealed Malloy's ruling to the Ninth Circuit and asked Malloy to block the project until the appeal is heard. The Ninth Circuit's two-week injunction will halt any work on building roads or logging while Malloy considers the request.
More Republican movement in the race for Montana's only congressional seat. Former Whitefish Republican State Senator Ryan Zinke announced his bid at the beginning of the week. Zinke most recently ran unsuccessfully as a Republican candidate for lieutenant governor with running mate Neil Livingston. He joins a group of Republicans who believe current Congressman Steve Daines will run for the Senate seat being vacated next year by Senator Max Baucus. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce says Zinke says he wants to move the U.S. toward energy independence, restore freedoms, and address the country's growing debt.
Congressional candidate Ryan Zinke describes himself as a man focused on teamwork. He's a retired Navy SEAL commander and says he was a coalition builder in the state legislature. He believes more of that mentality is needed in Washington, D.C., that people are looking at the nation's capital with dismay.
No one trusts the government. I want to trust my government. I think we all do.
Zinke says the dysfunction of the federal government was on full display during this month's federal government shutdown. The 16-day stalemate resulted from Republicans refusing to pass a budget without changes to the Affordable Care Act. Zinke believes that put the focus in the wrong place.
I personally think Obamacare is going to implode on itself.
He says the discussion should have been about the nation's budget deficit.
What are we going to do about a $17 trillion debt?
Zinke says Congressman Steve Daines was put in a delicate position during the government shutdown and debt ceiling standoff. But he says he would not have voted to reopen the government like Congressman Daines did. Zinke says he would have demanded a plan for addressing the nation's debt. Polls show the Republican Party has taken much of the political blame for the shutdown. The stalemate exposed a growing rift in the GOP between moderates and more conservative Tea Party Republicans. Zinke says he would like to see the party unify and more toward the conservative side of the spectrum because he believes the administration has gone too far to the left. He likes the Tea Party's focus on conservative cultural values, fiscal discipline, and above all, he says, the emphasis on freedom.
Well, you know, I like the discussion about being free and making sure that you're not harassed, you know, by the IRS for dissenting views or freedom of speech, or I don't like the fact that we're being spied on by the NSA.
That's not to say he labels himself hard right on all issues.
There's a lot of love about independence. And so I think I can pick and choose.
So far, it looks like Republican voters in 2014 will have plenty of candidates to choose between in the House race. Congressman Steve Daines is still technically in the race, although it's highly expected he will switch over to the Senate race. Former state senator and gubernatorial candidate Corey Stapleton and current state senator Matt Rosendale are running for the House. State representative and Senate candidate Champ Edmonds had earlier said he would switch to the House race if Daines switches to the Senate bid. Now, Edmonds says he may stay in the Senate race, implying he would give voters a more conservative choice than Congressman Daines. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
A Mexican man arrested last month on an immigration violation faces new drug charges as part of what authorities say was a wide-ranging conspiracy to sell methamphetamine in the Bakken oil patch. Marco Antonio Morales Roa was scheduled to be arraigned today before a U.S. magistrate judge in Billings. He could face decades in prison if convicted on charges he distributed 50 grams or more of methamphetamine to in Richland County and elsewhere in Montana. The U.S. Attorney's Office says the case is linked to grand jury indictments handed down this month against members of a drug trafficking ring that brought in large quantities of meth from Washington State. Separately, two California men were sentenced to lengthy prison terms yesterday after authorities say they distributed heroin, cocaine, and more than 80 pounds of meth across Montana.
Montana's unemployment rate for September has been delayed due to the federal government shutdown. The State Department of Labor says both the September and October unemployment are scheduled to be released on November 22nd. The Montana Department of Labor and Industry partners with the Bureau of Labor Statistics to produce Montana's labor market statistics. During the federal government shutdown, all data collection and production ceased, preventing the development of Montana's economic information. Montana's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate for August held steady at 5.3%. Nationally, September's unemployment rate was 7.2%, down slightly from 7.3% in August.
The National Park Service is about to publish the final version of its new regulation for snowmobiles and snow coaches in Yellowstone National Park. The new rule is set for publication in the Federal Register tomorrow. Park officials have been working on the new rule for several years. The goal is to allow winter access to Yellowstone while controlling the environmental side effects of having snow machines in the park. The latest version of the winter use plan doesn't strictly limit numbers of snowmobiles and snow coaches. Instead, planning focuses on transportation events. A transportation event is defined as one snow coach or a group of up to 10 snowmobiles. Yellowstone's winter use rule has long been a contentious issue for the park. Superintendent Dan Wank says he believes this one will stand up to scrutiny.
You never can say it's over until, you know, everything is played out. I don't believe we're going to be challenged, but if we are, I believe that we have done the work that we need to do to have a scientifically based, you know, the alternative is based on the best sound science. It's based on fidelity to the law and long-term public interest, and I think those are the keystones that will sustain this plan for the long term.
Greater Yellowstone Coalition Program Director Scott Christensen describes the final rule as a big step in the right direction.
I think the final winter use rule is a big step in the right direction. If you think about how far we've come in the last 15 years from a time when park rangers had to wear gas masks at the entrance gate to where we are today, I think it's a vast, vast improvement. And generally, we're pleased by the Park Service accelerating the implementation of their best available technology standards. They had proposed to make those requirements in 2017 and 18, and they have bumped that up to 2015 and 16, and we think that's a big improvement.
Yellowstone's new winter use rule will take effect starting in the winter of 2014 and 15.
The eggs of endangered Kootenai River white sturgeon in Idaho and Montana are less likely to hatch because of river flow changes caused by Libby Dam and other human actions. That's according to a new study released this week by U.S. Geological Survey. The study concluded that sturgeon eggs hatched best in places where rocks washed clean of algae by river flow. The report, prepared in cooperation with the Kootenai Tribe of Idaho, examined hatch success in the laboratory on various surfaces, such as clean rocks, algae-covered rocks, and sand. Sturgeon eggs settle and adhere to those surfaces in the wild when they develop into while they develop into larvae. White sturgeon and Kootenai River are listed as endangered in 1994.
Officials in Lake County say five unbranded horses reported missing by a Ronan family have been found in a pasture that is leased by the same family. Undersheriff Dan Yonkin told Kerr AM today that the horses were found in a pasture east of Ronan and are fine. Victorian Kevin Templer said they took a dozen horses to leased land south of Ronan on September 19th. When they returned from a hunting trip on September 30th, they could only find seven of the horses. The Templers reported the horses missing earlier this month. Yonkin says officials are still investigating who moved the horses and why.
Yes, it's not quite Halloween yet, but businesses are already gearing up for Christmas. Over the past couple of years, a buy local effort has been growing, and while many people have heard of Black Friday as the big shopping day after Thanksgiving, Small Business Saturday is gaining traction. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more on a local incarnation of a national effort to encourage people to shop local.
A few herbs, but mostly houseplants this time of year is what we really have.
Michelle Grigsby manages Plantland in Evergreen. She says they're busiest in the spring and into the summer, but also have an upswing of business around Christmas time, shipping out Montana-made wreaths.
We also do poinsettias, garland, boughs, miniature poinsettias also.
Grigsby says this year she signed up with the Kalispell Chamber of Commerce to participate in the Small Business Saturday promotion sponsored by the American Express credit card company. She says their business signed up partially to keep spreading the word that they're open all year.
Trying to get more people to buy local instead of buying through a box store or online, trying to get them to come in and buy local. Most people don't think that we're open year-round, and that's another thing that we are. And they think of us just as a garden center, but we actually have garden gifts and tools and all sorts of different things besides just plants.
Small Business Saturday started up in 2010. It lands on the Saturday after Thanksgiving, right on the heels of the famous Black Friday shopping day. According to the American Express website, small businesses register with the credit card company to be a participating vendor. It does not cost to register. Cardholders register their credit cards with American Express and then get $10 back on their statement for spending $10 or more at a small business on November 30th. The Kalispell Chamber of Commerce has been organizing businesses to get involved with the event. Coordinator Courtney Sprunger says she's got about 25 businesses signed up so far. She says about half of them had heard of Small Business Saturday before. Beckman's Fine Furnishings of Kalispell is one of them.
We sell everything from furniture to for living room, dining room, bedroom.
Owner Stephanie Hansen says they also have jewelry, art, and accessories. Hansen says they participated on their own last year.
Just like on a three-month average, Small Business Saturday probably increased our sales for Saturdays by about 10 times, just to get the word out there. We promoted it through Facebook and through our email list, our customer base list.
Sprunger says people interested in signing up for the event through the chamber should contact her to get signed up by the beginning of November. Businesses can sign up individually, but must meet certain criteria. Sprunger says they have to make less than $10 million per year and operate in fewer than 25 locations. She also says liquor stores, firearms manufacturers and sellers, and franchises are not eligible. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
As part of our ongoing series and Montana Public Media's Climate Week, tonight we focus on how climate change is impacting Glacier National Park. Melting glaciers are one of the most tangible effects of climate change. Glacier National Park has been jokingly called Glacierless National Park and Dirty Snow Cone National Park since the park's namesakes will melt away in just a few decades. Reporter Allison Mills recently hiked up to Grinnell Glacier with researcher Dan Fagry and his crew to see what's happening to the retreating ice.
Dan Fagry walks along a smooth patch of bedrock dipping down to an iceberg-filled lake. He is a research scientist with the United States Geological Survey's Northern Rocky Mountain Science Center and studies alpine ecosystems. Walking under the shadow of Mount Gould, where Grinnell Glacier hunkers down, Fagry stops at a small boulder. A pile of pebbles and dirt sit atop it, and Fagry taps the rock with a trekking pole.
You can tell that this was only recently uncovered by the retreating ice, because you can see the matrix of all the basically rock flour built in all around this rubble, so the rain hasn't had enough time to wash it away.
Fagry moves forward, climbing over a four-foot-tall ledge of sharp-edged rocks like they were stairs, making his way to Grinnell Glacier's melted margin. Ice carved this landscape, digging cirques and trimming ridges into knife-like arêtes. But the glaciers are disappearing.
And the fact that they're disappearing suggests that even the nastiest weather pockets in Glacier National Park are becoming more benign. They're warming up.
Fagry and his team thoroughly document this retreat because glaciers track changes in climate. When Glacier National Park was formed, there were about 150 glaciers. Now, there are only 25. But counting glaciers doesn't actually reflect how much mass has been lost. At Sperry Glacier, where Fagry and his team conduct mass balance measurements, they've documented a 34% loss of ice over 40 years.
We are using the glaciers as basically icons of change in a mountain ecosystem. They're very visible, they're tangible. People understand that when you have a warming climate, they get smaller.
The impacts are felt globally and locally. Worldwide, melting ice contributes to sea level rise, about 0.23 meters per year. Antarctica and Greenland contribute about 60% of annual sea level rise, and smaller alpine glaciers, like those in Montana, contribute 40%. Based on moderate projections from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, cities like New Orleans and Venice could be endangered by rising seas by the end of the century. More locally, in areas close to glaciers, pretty much all the water comes from glacial melt. Farther away, that contribution goes down. However, glaciers supply water during the dry late summer months. Not only does that affect irrigation and human needs, but glaciers are a key part of alpine ecosystems. These areas will be irrevocably changed when the ice is gone.
And while we can do some modeling and make some measurements and make some conjectures, when the glaciers go, we need to document those effects as well. So this will go on for a number of decades into the future.
Fagry says the park's glaciers will be gone in most people's lifetimes. They've been melting for more than a century, but changes are happening much faster than researchers thought they would.
Normally, you think about glaciers on geological timescales, and what we've experienced is in a very, very human timescale.
The park's glaciers would be melting even without the rapidly rising concentration of carbon dioxide and other heat-trapping greenhouse gases in the Earth's atmosphere. Fagry says the glaciers formed about 7,000 years ago, but much of the ice accumulated during the Little Ice Age. That ended in about 1850, and the glaciers have been retreating ever since. But the rate of change is what alarms scientists. They expect the glaciers to disappear in the next few decades.
That's anomalous. That's weird. And so you have to look for another cause for their disappearing other than just the normal kinds of long-term climate trends. It's accelerated, and we need to have an explanation for that.
Under normal climate conditions, glacial change is tracked over decades or years. But in this case, it's 1 week. Fagry and his crew look out across the milky blue lake. The ice face here dives down about 300 feet. Only 10 feet or so sticks up above the clefted edge along the water, where several car-sized boulders rest atop icebergs.
All of that was open water, and now it's all filled with ice. So we had a major event in the last week, and so Grinnell is smaller.
This big calving event that broke off the entire end of the glacier is a single instance of remarkable change. That alone doesn't mean climate change is happening.
You have to look at consistent trends over a fairly long period of time to say whether there's a really fundamental shift going on.
Changes like this are happening more often. The icebergs make the lake too dangerous for Fagry's crew to go out in their inflatable boats to mark the glacier's edge. Fagry just shrugs.
It's another day in the life of monitoring glaciers.
This is all the land survey can move forward. Researchers Eric Peitsch and Adam Clark assemble the GPS antenna and start to follow the margin's path upwards. Peitsch tries to step carefully on the wet rock exposed in a melted crevasse.
Right now we're using a GPS to map the cool. You right?
Yeah, component. The component of the glacier, the terminus, the glacier terminus, that's on the land. We couldn't map it in the water.
Clark sidesteps the patch of ice Pike slipped on.
Yeah, it takes a position every second. Basically drawing a line around the glacier here, around this section of it anyway, where we can actually travel.
He means up a steep talus slope broken only by 7-foot ledges of jagged bedrock.
So from here over is all the top of the glacier?
Yeah.
The air is cold and still at the top edge of the glacier. Far below, the ice's watery edge cuts a straight line. Crevasses crinkle the glacier center, and an old water tunnel opens half-melted, like an abandoned house with eerily dark windows. Glacial ice can be an ethereal blue, but Grinnell is mottled with dingy streaks of rock and debris. Researcher and crew leader Fagery points out the sheer rock face where Salamander Glacier sits 250 feet above the lake. Grinnell and Salamander used to be one, a giant bulge of ice nearly 1,000 feet thick.
And in 1887, when George Bird Grinnell first came up here to investigate this, the glacier came all the way down the top of those two waterfalls.
The water now cascades down a steep cliff hundreds of feet beyond the ice. From the trail, only the top crest of Grinnell can be seen. In the afternoon light, the landscape has a fairy tale, misty quality. But the science is real. So is the political debate, though some scientists don't necessarily want to bridge the two. Joel Harper is an associate professor of geology at the University of Montana. He researches meltwater dynamics in the Greenland ice cap and has done studies in Glacier National Park.
We present the science, and that's without political judgment, and that's for somebody else to decide. That's for policymakers to decide.
Harper says studying glacial retreat and meltwater is only part of the big picture of climate change.
I don't look at it as a single thing. It's putting together a suite of scientific evidence from a broad spectrum.
Still, melting glaciers remain one of the most compelling displays of climate change. Leaving Grinnell Glacier's icy margin, Fagery picks up a lost piece of equipment, then walks across tumbled rocks.
Glaciers are not partisan. They don't belong to any political party. They don't have any belief systems. They just sit there and reflect whatever's happening to them.
He passes boulders crowned with rock flower and pebbles while meltwater trickles down smooth bedrock. Fagery steps across stones spanning the small waterfall. Behind him, Grinnell Glacier hides from the sun in Mount Gould's shadow. For Montana Public Radio, I'm Allison Mills.
Tomorrow, Flathead reporter Katrin Fry looks into the impact of climate change on two of Montana's premier fish species, bull trout and West Slope cutthroat. Now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide tonight should be mostly clear with patchy freezing fog and lows in the mid-20s to lower 30s. Tomorrow, look for mostly sunny skies with some areas of freezing fog in the morning and highs in the mid-50s to lower 60s. In central Montana tonight, expect partly cloudy skies with lows 35 to 40 degrees. Wind gusts could reach up to 40 miles per hour. Tomorrow calls for mostly cloudy skies becoming partly cloudy with highs 50 to 55 degrees. And in southwest Montana tonight, it should be mostly clear with lows 30 to 35 degrees. Tomorrow, look for sunny skies with highs 55 to 60 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Al Smith.
Well, the rhetoric over the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is heating up. Amazing that a private health insurance plan that Republicans touted as a solution not so long ago is now being attacked by those same Republicans as being socialist, while Democrats who supported a national single-payer system now defend a private insurance plan. We even have disagreement as to whether it is a good idea for every citizen to have insurance coverage. The one thing everyone agrees with is that the decades-long increase in healthcare costs is a serious problem. Whether it's increasing health insurance premiums, rising drug costs, or escalating hospital prices, everyone agrees those costs need to be constrained or even lowered. Obamacare has a direct impact in bringing down insurance costs for many and providing coverage for many who had no insurance coverage, but it has limited impact on other direct medical costs. In the midst of the rhetorical debate over Obamacare, one common refrain from Republicans has been the mantra that we need national medical malpractice tort reform to lower health care costs. Actually, tort reform seems to be the only solution that Republicans have offered for our health care woes. First, a definition. Tort reform is just shorthand for limiting or taking away citizens' rights under the Seventh Amendment to have their case heard by a jury for the harms they suffer due to the negligence of a health care provider. However, there's at least one bright spot amongst Republicans in Congress. Some Tea Party members are saying no to national tort reform as an unconstitutional derogation of individual and state rights. A pertinent question is, does tort reform, stripping or inhibiting injured patients of their constitutional right to a trial by jury for the injuries they have suffered, cure our health cost problem? Political sloganeering says yes, but the facts say no. Montana already has much of the so-called tort reform Republicans in Congress are touting. The Montana Medical Association has praised the 40-plus pieces of tort reform legislation passed over the past decades, including a cap on damages. So what is all the stripping of constitutional rights gained for Montana when it comes to health care costs? Well, the facts say nothing, actually. According to the research done by the Kaiser Foundation, Montana's per capita health care costs are around $6,640 per year. Nearby Wyoming has virtually no tort reform and no cap on damages, yet their per capita costs are only 6% higher than Montana's. So does that mean tort reform saves the 6% in costs in Montana? Well, no, there is no link. For example, North Dakota has tort reform, including a cap on damages, and its per capita health care costs are 15% higher than Montana's. The only logical factual conclusion is that there are other factors at work when it comes to actual health care cost differences. Further proof of that comes from Texas, where their nearly decade-long experiment with tort reform has not yielded the promised lowering of health care costs. A study published in the Journal of Empirical Legal Studies examined the effect of Texas's 2003 tort reforms. The study's conclusion, quote, "In sum, we find no evidence that Texas's tort reforms bent the cost curve downward." So, no direct link between tort reform and health care costs. What are the causes? The Kaiser Foundation has looked at the numbers behind health care cost increases. While the particular percentages change from year to year, prescription drugs and new medical technologies continue as primary contributors to the increase in overall health spending. Kaiser also cites the rise in chronic diseases, with longer lifespans and greater prevalence of chronic illnesses putting ever-increasing demands on the healthcare system. Estimates put healthcare costs for chronic disease treatment at over 75% of expenditures. Of course, the one sure way to reduce malpractice costs is to reduce the number of preventable errors that lead to patient harm. A study published last month in the Journal of Patient Safety estimates that 210,000 to 400,000 American hospital patients die from preventable medical errors each year, one-sixth of all deaths in the country. Using the lower number, only about 2% of those deaths result in a lawsuit. And the study estimates that serious harm occurs 10 to 20 times more frequently than lethal harm. The Affordable Care Act actually has provisions to improve patient safety, from the use of electronic records to prohibiting payments for hospital-acquired conditions. Representative Dane says he favors increasing the quality of health care, but he opposes the current law, and he has offered no other solutions. The healthcare industry could receive total immunity from all lawsuits, and it would lower healthcare costs only 2%. Yet the primary healthcare solution we get from Republicans is an empty political soundbite, tort reform. Making it harder for injured people to seek justice is no solution, and it comes at a high cost, the further erosion of our constitutional rights. This is Al Smith for the Montana Trial Lawyers.
Al Smith is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.